Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. I'm Amy Stevenson. My guest today is Charlotte Sinclair. She's a vet at B&W Equine Vets, and we're talking vetting. So if you're thinking about buying your first horse and you're not sure what the vetting procedure is, then Charlotte's going to explain all about it. This is Horse Hour. Hope you're well. Welcome back to Horse Hour. We're doing one of our educational episodes today because the team at B&W Equine Vets are kind enough to give us a vet each month where we talk about problems, diseases and any issues that your horse might have. But today I'd really like to focus on the vetting procedure. So if you're looking to buy your first horse, then what is the vetting process? I've heard of a 2-stage and a 5-stage, but what exactly are the vets looking for and how can it help us in our decision with whether we want to buy a horse or not? So we're welcoming Charlotte Sinclair. She specialises in sport horses. Those are her passion, and particularly diagnostic imagery, tendon injuries and lameness. Charlotte, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Now, this is a complex issue that I think it sounds like it can be quite straightforward, but to me, I find it quite complicated because when we're looking at buying a horse, technically, we want the horse to be sound. We want him to be okay. So I remember when I first bought Blackjack, I had no idea what the procedure was. And somebody said, we've got to get the vet out. And I said, okay, well, what does the vet do? And they said, well, they'd give them a vetting. And I said, okay, well, what's a vetting? And they said, well, they just test a few things to make sure that he's okay. And that was about as much as I knew when I was getting a vet, because there's two different types of vetting procedures, aren't there? There's a 2-stage and a 5-stage. And I remember saying to my my coach at the time, well, why don't I just go for the 2-stage vetting, because that's the cheaper option and I'm already spending a fortune to buy this horse. And she said, no, definitely go for the 5-stage. But let's start, if this is okay, with you explaining the 2-stage vetting, then we'll talk about the 5-stage vetting and then the difference between the two.
Yes, so a 2-stage vetting is a full physical examination of the horse followed by a trot up with flexion tests, but doesn't include an exercise phase, whereas a 5-stage vetting is similar to the first 2 stages of the 2-stage vetting. However, we then follow on with an exercise phase and a recovery phase.
Hmm. Oh, okay. So when you're going to look at a horse, do you technically start vetting it from the second that you see the horse? Are there things that you look at from an observational point of view of them just being stood there?
Well, yes, we start vetting the horse in a sense before we've even seen it. As soon as we get the phone call from the prospective purchaser, we get some information, we take down the details, and we also take their initial concerns, having seen the horse. So they might have brought up a few little, flagged up a couple of issues that might draw my attention to something which I'm concerned about before I've even got as far as seeing it. So occasionally I get a vetting sheet with sort of question mark, not sure how sound the horse is. And obviously that's not a great starting point, and often the horse is a little bit lame, or not in all cases, but people's sort of concerns might be based on other problems they've had with previous horses. So some people might have had problems with, for instance, bone spavin, painful hocks in a prior horse, and then might want to make sure they don't want to have this problem again, so they want particular attention paid to specific aspects. And as you say, yes, so we take every little bit of information into account, and as soon as we see the horse, we want to know about its management and its history. We want to know whether the horse has any vices, whether it's in full work at the moment. That's very important because its soundness can relate to how much work it's in. Is the horse actually doing the job that the person wanting to buy it is intending to do themselves, or is actually out of work and not particularly fit and doing a job. So all of these things are important to consider.
That's interesting, because I remember them asking me what I wanted to do, and I said, well, I wanted to do dressage, but I didn't really understand why they needed to know that. Because is it different disciplines? Will you be looking for different things on the horse, or different potential problems?
Well, horses that do different disciplines do suffer different injuries to a degree. But we're interested in, I suppose, in the level that the horse is going to potentially compete to a degree, because some conformational issues, for example, might not be a significant problem in a horse at very low level, but might run more of a risk of injury when a horse that has more demands put upon it. And so we're interested in what the prospective purchaser wants to do with the horse, so we can sort of see whether the horse has been doing this, whether we think it has the potential to do this. And I suppose in terms of what is the intended use, one of the things that's very important is whether it's for a young person or a child. So if we're betting a child's pony or a teenager's horse, safety obviously is important anyway. It's absolutely paramount with someone buying a horse or pony for their child. So we are taking that into consideration as well, the temperament as well as other sort of proper veterinary issues.
So have you ever said to an owner, don't get this horse?
So I have, for instance, would you mean on because of behavioural issues?
Because of behaviour. Because I was always under the impression that that you couldn't actually say yes, buy this horse, or no, don't buy this horse, in case then the client came back later and said, well, you told me to buy it and it was fine, or you told me not to get it and now look what it's done and it's amazing. So it's difficult for you, because I guess you're just judging on the facts that you see of the horse, and then you give those facts to the owner.
Yes, so that's true. So although people talk about horses passing or failing a vetting, we don't write that on the certificate that a horse has passed or failed. We say it's either sort of suitable or unsuitable for the proposed purpose. So we don't officially say, yes, the horse has failed, but people interpret a horse as failed if we don't recommend it for purchase. Mm. And I have failed a horse that, for instance, it was being bought for a child and it wouldn't even let me pick up its back legs, and they were suggesting buying it for sort of 12-year-old girls. So you've got to take temperament into account along with everything else. Mm.
So let's start with then the two-stage process, and then we'll go on to the extra bits of what you actually look for in the five-stage process. So if you were to join me visiting a horse, what would you be doing? Like, take me through the whole thing.
So for a two-stage vetting, just as in a five-stage vetting, we would initially ask to see the horse's passport, and we would check that the horse's passport matches the horse. So we do that usually with a microchip scanner, so we can just scan the horse's chip and check that it matches the passport. If it doesn't have a chip, then we can look in the passport for its markings and check that we are dealing with the correct horse, because obviously that's important to have that identification. I would also check the vaccination history in the passport. Some horses are unvaccinated, or they might be out of date, and it's just useful to make a note for the owner if they need to start again, because if they're planning on competing the horse straight away and its vaccines are out of date, they can't compete, for instance, until the first two vaccinations have been administered, so they might be slightly held back by that. So it's just nice for that to be brought to their awareness.
Because I've just been through that exact thing, because I didn't realise that we'd gone over our vaccinations, so I've had to start the process all over again with the first three vaccinations again.
Yeah, so easy to rectify, but just it's nice that it can be avoided. Mm. So then after we've identified the horse, looked at the passport, looked at the breeding, noted down the official name of the horse, etc., we then look at the horse in the stable, and I would start by listening to its heart and lungs, because you want to listen to its heart when it's completely, well, as relaxed as possible. So that's the first thing that you want to do before it gets stressed or anxious. And so we listen to the heart, and we're checking for any heart murmurs or any arrhythmias. And we listen to the lungs for any wheezes or sounds of respiratory disease. And then I go on to do a full physical examination where I palpate the horse, I percuss the sinuses, so I check that the sinuses sound nice and hollow and don't sound sort of full of pus or anything like that. We check in the false nostrils because they can get cysts in the false nostrils, have a good look in the ears for any sort of, they can have sarcoids around the ears or oral plaques. And then we check the horse's teeth, we check whether the horse's age matches with the passport. And that's quite interesting because after the age of 9, horses can't be accurately identified, their age can't be accurately identified within sort of 3 years. So that's something that we always just check. We want to see if the horse has got wolf teeth or not, because that can cause a problem. Whether the horse needs dentistry, because that's useful to recommend to the prospective purchaser, whether the horse it needs immediate sort of dental treatment, rasping. And then we sort of follow on palpating almost every inch of the horse's body, looking for any lumps or bumps, have a thorough palpation of the limbs, both weight bearing and non-weight bearing, and see whether there are any signs of previous surgery, whether we think the horse might have had colic surgery, whether it's had any throat surgery, for example, looking for any surgical scars, any painful muscles. We check its back mobility, how well it flexes through its back, and just its general temperament, the condition of its skin, obviously thoroughly looking for sarcoids because that's a major skin problem in horses, and any even sort of low-grade things like a bit of mud fever, those sort of things that are going to have to be addressed even if they're not difficult to treat. We still make a little note of anything that we find. And after that, so that would conclude stage one of the examination. We'd move on to stage two, and that would be the trot up, examining the horse out of the stable. And that's when we examine the horse, initially just standing square, looking at its conformation, walking around the horse, perusing it and sort of making a general assessment. And I might then have a brief palpate of the horse again. If the light wasn't particularly great in the stable, I might have another look at if there's anything I was concerned about. And I would then look at the horse reverse in a straight line, so they should move back at walk in diagonal pairs. And this is to assess the neurological function. So does the horse know where its feet are? Not all horses do if they're a wobbler, for example. And then turning on a very tight circle, checking they can cross their legs underneath their abdomen. And this again is a basic neurological examination. We then look at them walk away and back in a straight line. And we're looking at the fetlock extension, so how much the fetlock sort of drops to the ground. And that might be decreased if the horse is sort of got any mechanical restriction or any pain. It might be increased if there's a lack of soft tissue support, but usually we're looking for it to be symmetrical between left and right. If it's not, that might raise questions. And we look at foot placement. So a horse should land heel toe as it walks. Lots of horses are quite flat-footed and land fairly flat-footed, but they certainly shouldn't land toe-heel. That could be a sign of heel pain, which is common in horses, particularly thoroughbreds with flat feet. Then after we've had the walking, I would then proceed to trot the horse away and back in a straight line, and would then at that stage perform some flexion tests.
Now, the flexion test's really interesting because we've been talking about that recently on the podcast with Dr. David Ramey, who says that sometimes you can't tell from the flexion tests because they could. Have you seen this article?
You mentioned it, but
yeah.
I haven't read it.
So he says that basically it's like holding your hand behind your back and pulling really tightly. Your arm's going to hurt afterwards. And in some cases, in vettings, it's really, flexion tests are really good for investigating problems that you think there might be a problem, but are not necessarily worthwhile in vettings. I'd love to know what you think of that.
So I think the flexion test is a very important part of the vetting. And it is a crude test, and I accept that and appreciate that. However, it can flag up some low-grade problems that aren't apparent just when a horse either trots in a straight line or is ridden or lunged on a soft or hard surface. So they have to be interpreted with caution, and every horse responds differently to a flexion test. And when we do a vetting, we do a prolonged flexion test for usually a minute, whereas if I was just assessing a horse's general soundness or doing a lameness workup, I would do a briefer flexion test. And clients often don't like a flexion test being done, but it is a standard part of the vetting. And although it's as I say, a crude test and varies between horses. What we want to see is symmetry. So if we see a horse that trots up sound, but it's stiff right hind on flexion compared to the left, then that alerts us to, well, is there something low grade going on in that right hind? And if it's a pony going through lead rein classes, but it's sound otherwise, then we might be quite forgiving and allowing that it's slightly stiffer on one leg than the other, provided it's not got an overt lameness. Whereas if it's a top level event horse, then that's going to be under a lot more stress and strain. And so I'd be then much more concerned. And if I were concerned, I would then repeat the flexion tests again if I was doing five stage vetting after the exercise phase. So I do think that they're important, and I think they're useful, and would flex all four limbs in a flexion test in a vetting, and that is standard procedure, and all vets that I know of would also probably concur with that.
Mm. Okay, thank you. It's fascinating to hear different people's opinions, because after speaking to him, I was thinking, well, what's the point in the flexion test? They don't show us anything, nothing that you couldn't see by trotting the horse up. But it's just interesting to hear a view of you when you're doing the vettings all the time, what you get from it. And what I didn't hear previously, what I didn't hear with the conversation was with him, and what you've told us is the difference, what you see the difference in the different legs. And I hadn't thought of that actually by the flexion, like you said, seeing the symmetry and seeing if there is a difference in each of the legs.
Yes, and that's the real benefit of a horse having left and right, is that when we're doing thorough orthopaedic examinations, we're always comparing left and right. And yes, you can have some problems that arise in both legs to a different degree. For instance, it's very common if you have a tendon injury for it to be in one leg, if it had to have a significant injury, then in the opposite leg to have a milder injury, because it's a wear and tear injury. So, but it's always useful if you feel a tiny bit of heat or swelling to feel the opposite leg. And I always try and teach that to students, just to the use of comparison between left and right for any subtle changes in terms of thickening or pain reactions. And pain reactions is actually quite interesting, and that's a good example. So in a vetting or normal clinic examination, you might, for instance, palpate over the proximal suspensory ligament and get a little bit of a reaction, and you think, well, is that normal for this horse, or is that an excessive reaction? So every horse has a different pain threshold when you're palpating it, so it's important to feel the opposite side. If it's exactly the same, that gives you confidence that it's normal for that horse, whereas if it's painful on one side and not the other, again, that alerts you to the fact that, is there something going on here that that could potentially lead to problems in the future, some low grade issue.
So when you've been through the flexion tests and looking out for these, what's the next step?
So the flexion tests and trot up, that's stage two. I would then go on within that stage two of actually just trotting the horse on a hard surface on a circle. And this is one of the toughest parts of a vetting for a horse to pass, because it really shows up any low grade foot problem. So that's its main use. So if a horse has any foot pain, then usually on a hard surface trotting around, then it exacerbates it. However, we have to be very careful that there's a suitable surface, because obviously it's not without risk trotting a horse round on a lunge on a hard surface. So we have to ideally have a nice flat gravel area, but we certainly wouldn't do it if we thought there was a likelihood of the horse slipping. So we wouldn't do it on, for example, a tarmac surface or something that didn't have enough grip. So we have to do it carefully and with the owner's permission. But that's a very useful test for foot soundness and some other lamenesses, as I say, particularly foot problems.
So what would the reason be for the owner to say, no, I don't want you doing that test? That automatically would flag up signs to me saying, well, what are you hiding?
It would ring alarm bells if there was a very suitable surface and they're saying not to do it, then that would be concerning. However, if there genuinely wasn't a suitable surface and you thought, actually, I can see their point, I think the horse might possibly slip, then I would then go for another option, which is when, rather than lunge the horse in a circle, you can, in these situations, sometimes trot a horse in hand around a corner, for example, down the lane and into a farm entrance. You can turn the horse sort of almost through 90 degrees and see it trotting with its weight distributed as it would be on a lunge, using an alternative technique. And it's not as useful, because you don't have the consistency, only have a few strides of the turn, but that would be my sort of second choice if lunging on a hard surface isn't available.
Mm. And is that the whole of the two-stage process?
We would then take a blood at the end of it. So for a two-stage retting or a five-stage retting, we take a blood with the permission of the owner, which is stored up in Newmarket for 6 months. And that is purely if the horse were to go lame the following week or suddenly have been a quiet, sweet horse and then change behaviour, somebody can choose to have the blood tested for dope, so you can see whether the horse has been doped. And it would very rarely happen. And I think the advantage of taking the blood is it puts anyone off doping the horse because they know it's going to be tested. So really, it's sort of probably a preventative measure. And it would be uncommon that we would go back and test a horse's bloods afterwards. And it also costs a couple of £100 to do, which puts people off too.
I was gutted though, Charlotte, because I was looking at buying a horse and I got the bloods taken, and it was all quite traumatic when the horse came over. He was so different to when I first tried him. I mean, this isn't Blackjack. It was a second horse that I was looking to buy, and when I bought him from Jersey and went over there, had a vet, came out, did all the tests. He was calm as a cucumber. He was like a riding school pony. He was so good in traffic, quite green in the school, but generally perfect for what I wanted. A bit of a confidence giver. Brought him over here and he was like a four-year-old stallion. I mean, he was 12 years old. He went mental. He threw me up against the wall. He dragged me through the field. He wouldn't let anyone near his back. He was horrific. And he ended up being quite dangerous. And I called the vet out and asked them, what should I do? Because I'm quite a patient person and I like spending time with them. And they said, well, we know you very well, Amy, but you've been outhorsed. This horse isn't for you. So I phoned the previous owner back up and said, what would you like to do? Because would you like to resell him somewhere else? It's cost me £500 bringing him over here, but I don't mind paying for him to go back to you to resell. She decided she didn't want him anymore. Anyway, it all went horribly wrong. She sold him on from the UK. And then as I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it, I thought, I'm going to get his bloods checked because something wasn't right. And I phoned up the vet and said, look, I'd like to get his bloods checked. She was trying to sue me for some money as well. And it was all getting really nasty. By the time I'd phoned to get his bloods checked, I'd missed it by a week and they'd already destroyed the bloods. So I could never find out if he was doped or not. How sad is that?
Yeah, that is frustrating. And often people are umming and ahhing for some time whether to or not. And then, as you say, you can sort of miss the moment because it is stored for 6 months and that's the limit.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I think some horses are sensitive to a change in their environment. I suppose some male horses then in the presence of mares might behave differently to if there weren't mares around. If, for example, they were a rig as well, then that could be a reason why they're different in a different environment. And I think often the case with young horses, they can be going beautifully, sweet as anything, and change of ownership, going from a professional yard to a non-professional yard, you can then run into problems. They can sort of challenge their new owner a little bit more than anticipated. So I think you have to be very careful buying sweet young horses for people that are less experienced, because they need to be able to sort of keep them on the straight and narrow, just like with children, I suppose. And then the other instance, it can be cobs as well. So a lot of people have the impression that cobs are sweet, lovely, quiet, reliable, nice animals, and they can change as well, and they can be quite challenging and have attitudes that people don't expect. So I've seen a few people wanting to buy a quiet cob, and actually it's not the quiet cob they thought they were buying, and they can be quite challenging too. So sometimes people slightly fall for sort of the wrong assumption.
So they hold the blood for 6 months, so that's your cutoff point if you want to get it checked. And I'm pleased that you take the bloods in the two-stage vetting as well. It sounds to me like the two stages are non-ridden process, and the five stage includes the ridden side of the test as well.
Yes, well, five-stage vetting then goes on to see the horse exercise. Now, if the horse is unbroken, it can be lunge. So the exercise phase can be non-ridden. It doesn't necessarily have to be ridden. So it could be just trotting and cantering on the lunge. If, for example, it was an unbroken three-year-old, so you could still do a five-stage vetting. However, normally we'd like to see the horse ridden, because we'd want to see that it's comfortable with a rider on and that it can do the job that it is supposed to be doing, and to see the fact that the weight of the rider doesn't exacerbate any lameness. So the reason we like to see the horse exercised is also because some lameness has become apparent after the horse has been exercised and aren't before. So if a horse is rested and just been stood in, it might be sound, but then some particularly soft tissue injuries might be worse with exercise. So we want to challenge the horse with exercise and have a trot up afterwards. And also some cardiac problems, so some heart murmurs or arrhythmias only transpire when the horse is exercised. So again, we listen to the heart at the end of strenuous exercise to evaluate this. And these are the parts that you don't get when you just have a two-stage vetting.
So I can't understand. I'm trying to think in my head any reason why I would just have a two-stage vetting. Because if I'm looking for a horse to buy to ride, no matter what age, what level, what discipline, I'm going to want to see what he's like with a rider on his back in case he has any back issues.
So I suppose a two-stage vetting would always be indicated in a horse that, for example, couldn't be lunged. So if you had a yearling, then you would only be aiming to do a two-stage vetting, because a five-stage vetting just isn't practical. In more mature horses, I think that people choose a two-stage vetting, as you mentioned earlier, because it's less expensive. So that's probably the main reason. And they know they're going to get as thorough a clinical examination. And I suppose if, for example, somebody knows the horse, they've seen it exercise, they've seen it sound in their mind after exercise, then they might be more inclined to go for a two-stage vetting. And sometimes it's just based on insurance. So some insurance companies might just require a two-stage vetting. So then the client might decide to go for the less expensive option, because perhaps they're just having the horses vetted to get insurance cover. So sometimes that's all that's necessary.
So what happens with the rest of the five-stage process then? When you've done the lunging and you've taken the bloods, what's the next stage? What's stage three?
So in the five-stage vetting, we don't go on and take the bloods until the very end. Mm-hmm. So at stage two, in the two-stage vetting, we take the bloods after we finish stage two. But in a five-stage vetting, stage three is the exercise ridden phase, that would say ridden or lunged. Then after the strenuous exercise, we then have the recovery phase. So stage four is the recovery phase, when the horse goes back to the stable, it stands in for a little while, and we then listen to its heart and lungs again as it recovers, monitor its heart rate coming down, and again looking for any arrhythmias or murmurs. And at this stage, some vets prefer to do the ophthalmic examination, then look at the horse's eyes when the horse is resting, because there's a little break. And other people, I used to do this. I tend to now look at the eyes at the beginning in the first stage, because it's frustrating if you then find something wrong with the eyes and think, actually, we could have stopped the vetting earlier and charged the client less. So I tend to just check the eyes at the beginning now, just really for that reason. But it's a suitable time to check the eyes when you've got a bit of time in recovery as well. So once the horse has had the recovery phase, phase four, we then come out to stage five, which is the final trot up. So we bring the horse out of the stable again and we look at it trot up. And some people repeat the flexion test at this stage. I only repeat the flexion test if I've had any concerns with the initial flexion test. So, but if they were all perfect, then I don't flex the horse again. And I then take it back to the stable and take the blood at this stage with the owner's consent.
Just quickly, sorry, going back to stage three and the exercise, is it walk, trot, canter on different reins? Is that what are you asking for?
So we want the horse to do what it usually does and what it can do. So we always want to see, there are certain things I'd always want to see. So I'd like to ideally see the horse trot on both reins, trot a 20-metre circle on each rein. I'd like to see the horse canter a 20-metre circle on each rein if it's able to. And I also ask the rider to ride in full seat first of all, because if you've got a horse that's a bit sensitive through its back, sometimes people go straight into a forward seat with the canter, just to be very light on its back, and that can potentially cover up a back problem. So I'd like to ride it to be in full seat, and then when we're asking the horse to go forward a bit more and canter to get it going, then I get them to go forward seat then when we're moving the horse on along the long sides. I always ask the prospective purchaser whether they've jumped the horse themselves and seen it jump. So it'd be unusual that we'd jump a horse in the betting, but if the prospective purchaser was there and they wanted to see the horse pop over a little fence again, we might bring that in as well.
I think it's key to remember as well that we are the buyer, we're buying the horse. So I always say, don't be afraid to ask as many questions. If you want to make sure through the vetting process, they can speak to you, can't they? And say, look, what are your thoughts on this? And
yes, and very much so. We are working on behalf of the prospective purchaser, not on behalf of the person selling the horse. So really, we shouldn't reveal any information to the owner of the horse, because we have purely working on behalf of our client, the prospective purchaser. And so I like to speak to them along the way. And generally, I just like to give a running commentary as I'm looking at the horse, and then everyone knows what I'm seeing as we go, as my usual approach when the client is at the vetting. But obviously, the client isn't always at the vetting. So in which case, I'd phone them if anything arose during the vetting that might want us to stop the vetting, or if any particular concerns I have. Otherwise, I'd call them at the end of the vetting and discuss the findings.
I remember when I was had Blackjack vetted, I had the option to ride him myself, and for me that was really important, because I kept thinking, well, the buyer, the owner could ride him. It was actually through an agent, but let's say it's the owner could ride him, and they could try and hide things that maybe she can get him into canter and she can make him canter 20 meters, but if I can't do that, or me riding him might throw up something different. What do you think?
Yes, I mean, I would say most clients decide not to ride the horse at the vetting because they've already tried the horse and they've tested it out, and they're happy for the usual person to ride the horse, and it's quite nice to see the horse from the ground as well. So I would say most prospective purchasers don't want to ride the horse at the vetting, in my experience. But as I say, if you want to, then there's no reason why you shouldn't.
Maybe I just couldn't wait to get back on his back, that's probably.
That's a good sign.
I took my coach with me as well for all training and vettings and things. So she, because I didn't know what I was doing, so I needed that advice and that support. So I very much looked to my coach and I looked to my vet for them to guide me through this process of what's right, what's wrong, and what I should be looking for.
Yes, no, I think it's really useful to bring somebody along to give you a second opinion. So, quite often people will have already looked at the horse with their coach, or and any concerns that are flagged up, they pass on to us, and we take into account when we're looking at the horse. Mm.
Now, an interesting point I really wanted to ask you was, when I first looked at picking my vet, picking a vet to do the vetting, it was far away from where I lived, so I couldn't have my local vet. There is no way I could afford to send him up there for the day. So I needed to find another vet, and I had two options. I had the vet that the horse was already registered with the previous owner, and I had another vet that had never been near the horse or the yard before. And in my opinion at the time, my view at the time was, I was better having a vet that had no association with the horse, because, and this is going to sound really bad because you're all professionals and I don't expect you to hide anything, but I just kept thinking, oh, well, they might not tell me everything if I go to that horse's vet. So I thought it was going to be more unbiased if I went somewhere else. But what would you suggest?
Well, I mean, there are pros and cons, really. So I think that the Sometimes, I mean, ideally you would have your vet travel, but as you say, the travel costs are often prohibitive. So I will often find myself recommending vets in other areas to my clients if they're far-reached parts of the country. So the advantage of having the horse's normal vet the horse is that they are obliged to disclose all of the clinical history to the prospective purchaser with the permission of the owner. So therefore you get all of the information from the vets regarding that horse's clinical history. Now the owner isn't obliged to divulge that information, however if an owner says, well no, I'm not going to let you have the history, then that would obviously flag up concerns.
Well, that's really interesting because I wasn't allowed to get the previous history. And had I known if I'd gone with their vet, I would have got the previous history, then that would have made my decision for me as to which vet I used.
Yes, and I think a lot of people aren't aware of that. And I think it can make a big difference. And I've had an example of a pony club client recently, and I said, we'll get the history from the vets, and it flagged up all sorts of things, and they were concerned by the history, and actually it put us off purchasing the horse, or even going as far as arranging a betting. And then equally we have forced our event riders that make the same recommendations, they get the history. We had an unfortunate episode recently where I said, well, make sure you get the history. They got the history just as they had finished the vetting with a full set of x-rays. And they then found out the horse had various injuries that hadn't been disclosed until the vetting was done, and they didn't buy the horse. So you do have to, if you're going to get the history, you need to make sure you get it before the vetting is done if it's going to inform your decision. But obviously it can be difficult to get consents and things move through, so just need to be careful with that. And in terms of your concern about vetting a vet vetting their own client horses, I think vets are going to be neutral and fair, and I certainly don't have problems with vetting my clients' horses for other people. And I think we're neutral, and as you say, sort of very professional about that. But I can see why you would have potential concerns, but I think the advantage of having the history would outweigh any concerns.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, if you can get the history, then it's a no-brainer, because that was one thing I could never get hold of.
Yeah, very useful.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I begged for it.
But one has to bear in mind that some people might have more than one vet, and you might not have a complete history, etc., etc. But on the whole, you should be able to get the animal's history.
And the x-rays. So the x-rays, are they an additional cost if we'd like to get x-rays?
Yes. So we often have to radiograph horses if they are more expensive. For example, horses usually over about £10,000 require a full set of radiographs if they're going to be insured. Or if the horse is a young horse that's going to be going up the levels and potentially more valuable in the future, we might radiograph those even though they're less than £10,000 because we want to screen for any potential problems. Or people might have had previous problems and they want to know that they're not going to have bone chips or any sort of arthritis problems beforehand. So we tends to be the sport horses that we will radiograph. We wouldn't do it routinely, but just at the request of for certain clients.
I think it's quite interesting for young horses to have them x-rayed as well, to see their development of how they're doing and they haven't hurt themselves in the field. My one regret was not getting x-rays. I wish I'd spent the £800. I don't know whether the costs, you can tell me the costs in a moment, but I think it was £500 for a, or £450 for a 5-stage and something like £250 for a 2-stage. Is that what it is now?
It's less than that. It's about £150 for a 2-stage and about £250 for a 5-stage.
Wow.
Depending on where you are in the country. Yeah. So they're, I think closer to London, it seems to be much more expensive. But around here, we're in the West Country, it's a bit more reasonable. Plus, obviously, journey fee and then radiographs, about £350 on top of that, plus sedation.
Sedation, is that for the X? Can you do the X?
Yes.
Yeah.
So obviously, in terms of taking the bloods, we have to make sure that we take the bloods and then sedate the horse, because obviously the sedation would check on the blood, so you need to make sure you get the order all correct for that.
And the x-rays, do you do the x-rays at the field with the yard that the horse is at?
depending on the facility. So if they didn't have the facilities and radiographs were required, sometimes we arrange for the horse to be brought into our clinic so we can do the vetting at the clinic and carry on doing the radiographs afterwards.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I have had a case, for example, when I vetted a horse for a client in Devon. So they drove all the way to Devon, did the 5-stage vetting, did 36 radiographs, and on the last radiograph we found it had kissing spines, and the lady didn't want a horse with kissing spines. So you can sort of fail at the last hurdle, which is frustrating.
That's why we're doing the vetting. And actually it just goes to show how thorough you are and how you need to go through all that state those stages, because otherwise, like I said, my one regret was not having the x-rays, because Blackjack's issue was so deep rooted, it would only have shown up in an MRI. Well, Charlotte, that's incredible. Thank you so much for talking us through the 2-stage and the 5-stage. Is that pretty much the whole vetting process then?
Yes, it is. Well, then we go on to obviously write up a certificate and send that through to the prospective purchaser as to whether we're recommending the horse for purchase or not. But we would have discussed all of these points immediately after the vetting, if possible, or as soon as possible after the vetting. And as I say, occasionally we take radiographs. Occasionally we might scope the horse, which is when we look at the airways to check its larynx. But that wouldn't be done sort of routinely.
Okay, but it gives us a really good clip. I mean, I didn't have any idea how the depths of what you guys look for. So it really does give a good overview. And the certificate that we get, like you said earlier, isn't a pass or fail, is it? It's a bit like an MOT, isn't it, really, with some advisories?
Yes, and I suppose you mentioned earlier about how you regretted not having radiographs taken of your horse. So I mean, there can be a disadvantage, I suppose, that if you have a horse that's perfectly sound, flies through a 5-stage vetting, and then if anything is picked up on the radiograph that isn't actually causing a clinical problem, that might mean that you'll be excluded on your insurance for those issues. For example, if there was very mild bone stuff, then you might then be excluded, whereas the horse might remain clinically sound for years, even though it's got some changes on the radiograph. So radiographs show sort of historic problems as well. So that's just something to sort of take into consideration.
I think that's very sensible, because I'm not sure I would have purchased my horse. I'm glad I did, but if I'd known the full extent of the injuries and the history. However, saying that, when he was showing up as a little bit lame, it's I guess we've got to weigh up from what you say when you do the vetting as to whether it's something that we and the horse can live with, or if it's something that's so serious that we categorically can't, like kissing spine.
And I always say that no horse is perfect, and I think that's very true. You occasionally get a perfect horse, but it's rare. But we're talking about risks. And the vetting is all about, as you say, weighing up risks, and that's what we're trying to assess. And yes, we can't predict exactly what will happen in the future, but if we flag up several problems, then you're potentially more likely to have a problem than if we don't. So you can have a perfectly sound horse one day, then a week later it might by chance go lame. But obviously if we can start with a cleaner slate as possible, then that's optimal.
Well, it just helps us make an informed decision ultimately. That's what we want to do. Well, Charlotte, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your time. We can follow B&W Equine Vets on Twitter. They're always putting out lots of great information. It's at BW Equine Vets. And we have lots of articles from Charlotte and the team at B&W on our website, horsehour.co.uk. I'm going to let you get back into surgery now, Charlotte. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Next month, B&W Equine Vets are joining us to talk about kissing spine. It's a problem that quite a few of you have mentioned you're worried about, including the development of the young horse. So when is the skeleton fully formed? And does the riding, the way that you ride, affect your horse potentially having kissing spine? So we'll talk about the symptoms, the signs, and the treatment as well. You can catch up with previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk sportspower.co.uk. Charlie Unwin's on there at the moment. He's a sports performance psychologist, and it's really fascinating to hear his advice if you're overcoming fear or confidence issues, but also if you need to refocus. Sometimes it's quite easy to lose our focus when we're in the midst of riding all the time and we're with our horses all the time. When you're actually riding, what is your focus? Really interesting to hear Charlie's advice. You can also hear Steph Erdley. She is a Grand Prix dressage rider and she's just done her first international show. So we hear about Steph's journey. She's a judge as well. She gives us some advice on what she looked for when she was a judge and what we can expect from judges when, you know, we're going into our dressage test. We're quite nervous. We know the judges are looking for certain things, but what exactly is it that judges are looking for? There's loads more episodes as well. We've got over 150 podcasts for you to listen to. So there's something for everybody. If there's a subject or topic that you'd really like me to cover, then drop me a direct message on Twitter at Horse Hour. I hope you've had a really lovely bank holiday weekend with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter Mondays 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.